Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew, your smile showed the reason, I watched it all come true, your touch is cold and distant, and I still
comes off of mute.
Well, I was going to say it's the Sweet Pea show, and that probably Sweet Pea.
Hello, everyone. I'm talking, I'm saying hello, and then you guys start talking, and I'm like, hey, maybe I should say something. Hello, everyone. How are you? How do you do?
Very well.
Sweet discussion. Yes, there we go. Highlighted by Raconteur and AP, which, hey, great you guys are there. Because, of course, as soon as we started, Amadeus started to say hello. Well, welcome to Sweet Discussions here on Blog Talk Radio. We are with All Poetry, world's largest poetry site on the internet. Inside of that is Team of Voices with my lovely, lovely team there and our founder and great queen, Deborah Lee. I'm lucky enough to be a part of that, a great group of people that love to chat, talk about poetry, and do all the wonderful things that we do. Just hang out and do our thing. Tonight is a really great show. We are going to be talking about Paul Laurence Dunbar and his great wife and his association with the Wright brothers. It's kind of stuff that you sit there and go, wait, how did I not know that? I was just not a part of history. Airplanes and poetry. Even though the two of them did not know each other, or actually Mr. Dunbar passed away before the Wright brothers were actually flew their first flight. They were in high school together. But the Wright brothers did print a lot of Paul Dunbar's first poems and his little newspaper that went about Dayton, Ohio. And we'll get into some of that a little bit later. But first off, let's say hello to Mr. Rackentor. Hello, Rackentor.
Hello, Sweepy.
How are you?
You know, same old, same old. Nothing new.
Same old, same old.
Yeah.
Nothing new, huh?
Nah.
All right, where are you? Is it getting warm in New Jersey?
I'm sorry, what about New Jersey?
Is it getting warm in New Jersey, even though you're in New York?
I think it's snowed the other day, but it still can't make up its damn mind.
Colorado's kind of the same. What about Australia? We're going to go down under. AP, how's things in Australia?
I've had a strange old morning, Sweet. So I've had one of my good friends who's not so well. So a shout out to Andrew, who is recovering from a tumor surgery in his brain this morning.
Wow.
Oh. Well, Andrew, feel better. I have the same thing going with her. Yeah, I hope.
So that's.
Did they equate the tumor to the size of a piece of fruit?
Oh, no. But I have to say, Rack, Andrew is a truly inspirational guy. I met Andrew at the age of 18 when he was going through university, and I became one of his readers because he had no sight. And so he had a team of us who would read. For him, and I was one of them, and I still know him after 35 years. So.
No, I was just, you know, it seems to be the phenomenon that you know, anytime, you know, someone talks about, you know, a tumor, they're like, it was the size of a cantaloupe, a grapefruit, you know, they always equate it to
No, it's tiny. It's a tiny tumor, but it's just in the wrong
place.
Awesome. So,
Yeah.
No, he should be fine, all things being equal, which they will be.
Awesome.
Yes, oddly enough, I have a outlaw sister that just had some cancer removed from her uterus just yesterday. So.
Oh, my. Wow.
You know?
Yeah, although they do these days, I've got to say, Sweet, is quite remarkable compared to even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It is. It's just stuff they
It's
just incredible.
Crazy. But so, shout out to my girl, Sheila, my former sister-in-law, who's now my outlaw. But I love her so dearly. I love a lot of my outlaws. It's crazy. All right.
That's fine. You've got to see a psychologist about that. That's not normal at all.
Yeah, they love me too. It's kind of weird. It is. Love my outlaws. Not so much the ex-husband, but the outlaws I love. let's see. Paul Dunbar, you know, I don't know how familiar either one of you are about this poet. How familiar were you about Paul Dunbar before I kind of threw him in your face and said, hey, I like this guy. Like, I wasn't a big Van Halen fan before I met you.
Right.
I would have read 5 poems of his, Sweet. That's my total number up until you put this topic on the board.
That's 5 more than I read.
5 more than you read. Okay. Well, that's fair enough. I got to say, I thought I was a reader of his until I put this up on the board, and I went, wow, I hadn't even touched the tip of his life or his career or anything as far as he, you know, his life was, and yay for my home state. He was Dayton, Ohio was the first, the state of Ohio was the first state to recognize his home and his poetry as a historical site for any African American. Wow. So I was like, well, hey, way to go, Ohio. So I was very, very excited about that. And I want to give a big shout out to Gerald Green, because he is a member of the Paul Lawrence Dunbar Association. And let me pull up his information, because I do not want to get this wrong in any way, shape, or form at all to misquote him or do anything like that, because it's very important that I do this right for him. Let me get him up here as I do dead air. But he wrote me and gave me all kinds of information. I've got poems that he gave for me. But he is the member of the Dunbar Literary Society. They meet monthly at the Dunbar House. In 2019, he published a book with 422 of Dunbar's poems, plus his topical index. So Gerald has a book out. It can be purchased online, and I do have that link if anybody wants it. He is part of that historical study. Right now, he's working on his Paul Dunbar's 150th anniversary year. I've got four poems that he sent me that he'll read for us. He is, I don't know, what else did he write me? He's organized the year-long celebration of his 150th year. So I do have a couple of poems that I'm going to go ahead. We're going to start with that, with Gerald Green reading Paul Dunbar. He just amazed me, obviously, but he did send me a bunch of things of him reading this. So I think it's going to be very pleasurable to have Gerald Green reading Paul Dunbar for us. So we're going to start with, and unfortunately I don't have them before the board. I wish I did. That would have been, you know, pretty brilliant of me. But one is Bridal Measure by Paul Lawrence Dunbar. Here we go. I could wait. You know what? I might be able to do this. I might. A bridal. Hold on. Excuse me one second. I'm sorry. I'm not as prepared.
I'll put it up on the board.
Will you? See, you're right on top of that. All right.
Right now.
You want me to give you a list of them? All right. See, there you go. All I got to do is ask and I shall receive. All right, well, I will hit that, and then we can go. So here we go.
Welcome to Gerald Green Poetry. A Bridal Measure, written by Paul Lawrence Dunbar. Come, essay a sprightly measure, tuned to some light song of pleasure. Maidens, let your brows be crowned as we foot this merry round. From the ground a voice is singing, from the sod a soul is springing. Who shall say 'tis but a clod quickening upward toward its God? Who shall say it? Who may know it that the clod is not a poet, waiting but a gleam to waken in a spirit music shaken? Phyllis, Phyllis, why be waiting? In the woods the birds are mating. From the tree beside the wall, hear the amorous robin call. Listen to yon thrush's trilling. Phyllis, Phyllis, are you willing? When love speaks from cave and tree, only we should silent be. When the year itself renewing, all the world with flowers is strewing, then through youth's Arcadian land, love and song go hand in hand. Come, unfold your vocal treasure. Sing with me a nuptial measure. Let this springtime gamble be. bridal dance for you and me. Visit YouTube for more Gerald Green poetry.
I think that's just stunning. A Gerald, amazing read. But the poem itself, just beautiful. Who shall say it's just but a cloud looking upwards towards its God? Who shall say it who may know that the cloud, that the clod is not a poet, waiting but a gleam to waken in the spirit music shaken? I love his flow. I love his words. I love the way he wrote. His cadence and his alliterations and his dialect was very, it's what promoted him to the top of his career and what was mostly talked about. This isn't exactly one of his dialect poems, but more of his spiritual type of poems. He had this way of words and the way he talked to people and the way he was polished in some ways, and yet in this other group of poetry he wasn't. So he's so vast in his language and his wording and his audiences, and this is one I love how he uses: when love speaks from cave to tree, only we should silent be. When love speaks from cave to tree, I love that line, by the way. So, Mr. AP, your thoughts on this particular poem?
Well, I like you, love the way that he expresses himself, and obviously the rhyme, and that it's a story poem, but the rhyme also is part of the story. So you'll see that he goes back to the same rhyme in the last stanza as he uses in the first, and there's something quite neat about that. It's quite beautiful in terms of its composition, and as a rhymer, I appreciate it very much. Sweet.
And Rack, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful. I mean, he's got, you know, it was a perfect read, like you mentioned, I liked it a lot. It was, I don't know. It just kind of left me a little speechless.
You know, he does what you do, or you do what he did, AP. You take complexity and simplification. You make things look so simple, but they're very complex.
Yeah.
And you do that a lot. There's like, you know, it's simple. It looks like it's simple rhyme and simple form, but it's so complex that people don't even know you're doing it. And that's what makes it complexities of simplification. That's what you do. That's why I don't like
you sometimes. Simplification of complex ideas.
Yeah. You're dichotomy in itself. All right, AP, you got to get going. You got to rule the world. Are you leaving me? Are you hanging out with me? What are you doing?
Well, look, I was going to hang out for another 10 or 15. I do have a poem for you, though, Sweet.
Good.
And I was wondering, can I read the Paul Lawrence Dunbar poem that it comes off first? Is that okay? Is that allowed?
Oh, absolutely. I'm all for that. Please do.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to go down to the bottom of my piece, which is called "Of Flying He Penned," and I'm going to read a madrigal by Paul Lawrence Dunbar, and it goes a little bit like this. Dream days of fond delight and hours, as rosy-hued as dawn are mine, love's drowsy wine, brewed from the heart of passion flowers, flow softly o'er my lips, and save thee all the world is in eclipse. There were no light if thou were not, the sun would too be sad to shine, and all the line of hours from dawn would be a blot, and night would haunt the skies, an unlaid ghost with staring dark-ringed eyes. O love, if thou wert not my love, or could I perchance not thine, what then? The gift of men, or favour of the God above, plant aught in this bare heart, or teach this tongue the singer's soulful art. Ah, no, 'tis love and love alone that spurs my soul so surely on, sends night to dream and thorns to roses fair blown, and winter drear the spring. Oh, were it not for love, I could not sing. Ping pong.
Okay, brilliant.
You like?
I don't even, I guess. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful poem. And so,
yeah.
And so, with the same rhyme, end rhyme, but slightly different words, this is of flying he penned. And it goes a bit like this. See, our bond ways as flight empowers, chase moods into dawn past design. Shove, so wings align. Wires tied to drawn apart while wind towers flow softly over my lips. Bands taught here a plain high whips. Paired in school, then when many not, the paths of inventors and a poet entwine. One writes, others sign. In homework shared a common knot. While imaginations would arise, ghosts and ghouls pass air's demise. Push and shove to when, upon this green field then, observe the first flight well above, meaning for many created by art, clouds are touched, visions now start. By pen does the truth become known that spurred these thoughts as torn, pages of books printing born, that within care and love shone, balance this a pair by wing, as to history, imprinted their air sing. End poem.
Well, AP is just beautiful. I love the interwining of the two of them as friends and how one shines the other. And I love that you put in that, you know, he was literally writing on the walls of their print shop. And, you know, I love that very much. I think it's very important. And balances a pair of wings as to history imprinted there, air sing. I was reading not too long ago, and it's something that actually, before you leave, I'm going to play for you, and I think it's important because what he has to say is very important, and I'll let you comment on it, but I can't say it till after we read it, but It goes to what the one poem is that I really enjoyed. What the two of them could have accomplished if he had lived past his 33 years. And what an inspiration he might have. You know, there's the whole motto, if he had lived, what we could have accomplished. What these two brilliant men may have accomplished in history together as, you know, an African-American male and a white male. And maybe things could have gone maybe a different way, or maybe they could have impacted something a different way, or maybe absolutely not. But, you know, there are visions that maybe we could have seen. But, you know, we're shared a common knot while imaginations would arise, ghosts and girls pair, heirs demise. I mean, I can just, you know, imagine, you know, hey, I have no clue what a right triangle is. And, yeah, I can't write or rhyme anything over here. And just, you know, just two boys. Just basically two high school kids hanging out when, you know, you're literally just barely years off of Civil War. And these kids are just friends. And running around and the tension's just not there. They're just humans. And that comes shining through in your poem, and I really appreciate that. Because that's what I was looking for, that bravery, that love, that unique human spirit that's in us all when you take away all the crap. And I really appreciate that. And, oh, I got people all over my line. Hold on. Hello, 419.
Yeah, that's Adam. Hey, sweetie.
Hi, Adam. I thought that was you. And then I've got Deborah Lee right behind you. Okay.
Oh.
Hey.
Hey.
Me? Sorry.
Yeah.
You kind of got stepped in a little bit. I enjoyed it, AP. I like hearing the original, the one that inspired you first. You know, put me in a different headspace, because you know I wouldn't have read it otherwise. So I really appreciated that. That was a great thought, reading that first before you read yours. The ideas that you promoted throughout, the story that you kind of wove through, was kind of a flight in its own right. I enjoyed it very much. The line about, I think you mentioned something about, the wind beneath your wings even. So that thought carried through nicely. I don't think you used those words, but, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, I just appreciated the idea. You definitely promoted that thought too. The inspiration between friends, and that's a gorgeous thought in and of itself. It was a lovely piece.
Thank you, Rick.
Adam, did you happen to hear the poem?
Yeah, I actually heard it. I thought it was just, you know, like Rick said, there's a dialogue here in a way between these friends being inspired, and almost, you know, I almost feel like I see them, you know, carried together throughout life, pushing each other and inspiring each other. And the way it was read, and almost the cadence of the whole piece kind of almost has like a bouncy, floating air type of, but like with the specific, like, if I fall here, you push up here, and then we'll carry each other through the ups and downs, or the to or fro. And it was wonderful. It was a cool piece.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
And Deborah, did you hear the poem?
Well, no, I missed getting to hear him read, but I was reading it while I was waiting. Well, for one, I think the rhyme pattern that you went with is really awesome. But I like the fact that you put in the line, like, flows softly over my lips, in like the lingo that I've found in quite a few of the poems of his that I was reading earlier today. But the whole poem itself is really awesome, and I'm looking forward to listening to the beginning of Sweet Show so I can hear you read it.
And that line that you mentioned is a line that's a straight quote from his piece that I read.
Yeah, but I like that you included in there. It gave it a little piece of him, I guess, is what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Absolutely. If you, I know you got to run, so if you've got 2 seconds. I have, well, maybe 2 minutes, maybe three. I'm actually going to go ahead and play Gerald Rule. So, because I want you to hear his poem.
Now, which one is it?
It's actually Gerald's poem that he wrote.
Oh, it's Gerald.
I actually Gerald's poem. So I just really liked it. His message is really cool. So let me get that up on the board. Oh, it's already there. There we go. I've got Deb here helping me, so life is good. So this is written by Gerald about the relationship between the two of them, and I think it's pretty cool.
High school friends.
Here we go.
Written and read by Gerald Green. If Paul had lived, I like to think the outcome might have changed. And Jim Crow in the North would fade as attitudes were overcome. His wit and dialect discourse amazed each audience with knowledge that should not have been by someone dark with no white blood. His growing influence each year began to change the course of Northern racial prejudice to those of African descent. Large crowds paid entry fees to hear his words and poetry. He spoke like famous men, without a fear or frivolous concern. Tuberculosis took his life when he was 33. Too young, his gifted life cut short, inhibited what could have been. This sesquicentennial marks 150 years since birth in Dayton's winter cold, where early life prepared his mind. He died before the rights took flight and tasted worldwide fame. He didn't see what Orville did and could not give him his advice. They'd been close friends in high school days and business partners, too. As Dunbar wrote, and Orville's press created the Dayton Tattler. We still salute his poetry, give honor to his skill, and Dayton glows with civic pride about these two precocious men.
Yeah. I really love this poem because it, and when I was reading your poem, and it kind of reminded me of what would have happened. Could we have changed some of the Jim Crow laws, and could attitudes have overcome? Because Paul Dunbar was such an influence to all races. The way he presented himself, the way he was really taking over, becoming with a man that people didn't look at his color, they looked at his education, the way he spoke, the way he moved people. What could have happened if these two men, the men who invented a flight and the men of a man of words, a man of poetry, a man that, you know, these men could have changed the world. As a matter of fact, they did. But 33 years, it just took his life. And, you know, too young, his gifted life cut short, inhibited what could have been. And, you know, his sentence amazed each audience with knowledge that should not have been by someone dark with no white blood. Can you imagine what might have happened? As he began to change the course of Northern racial prejudice to those of African descent, he was on that path. He was on that journey. And I look at history and I wonder why it was so washed away. I mean, his influence must have been so powerful that now 150 years later, I'm sitting here talking about it tonight. And we're you know, he's just such a powerful individual, and he's still not well known, and he still should be out there, and he should be on the lips of every child, and he should be such a well-known poet that everybody in the poet world should know. And I was a fan, at least I thought I was, until I really started to know him. And like I said, this is, why didn't I know that? Why didn't I know his friends with Orville Wright? But hey, we all live and learn. So, Deb, your comments on this.
Well, you know, I'm always impressed with this stuff that Gerald shares. But on this one, I thought it was really, I was reading about Dunbar and the circumstances of his life and stuff like that, obviously, since it was your topic. And for one, he had died so young. That's unbelievably young. But I really like how Gerald incorporates so much of the stuff that I learned about him in the poem. It's like, I think that poetry is an amazing way to teach, because it's, if you can get somebody to start reading it and they didn't even realize that you just taught them something because they were into the poem, you did a good job. And I think he did here. And where he said tuberculosis took his life when he was 33, too young, his gifted his life cut short, and you can't help but think, imagine how many poems he would have wrote, how many people he would have influenced. And I know you've touched on all this, but I like how this gave me information, some I read, some I didn't already know, and left me with food for thought as he educated me. I think he did really, really awesome.
Yeah, and rock and roll.
He agrees with me.
AP, any thoughts?
Well, Dayton, Ohio is not a big city, but, you know.
No, it is not.
Even today, of 140,000-odd people, and I've never been to Dayton. I've been to Cincinnati, by the way, but I've never been to Dayton.
I'm sorry.
It's a shame because I'm not, wasn't that far away. The thing that gets you is just how impressive that connection is, and I just think the pride that Gerald has when he reads. He's a fantastic reader, but obviously he just loves the work that Paul Lawrence Dunbar, and he's doing and to promote it, and that's wonderful. And it is such a huge shame that there was this brilliant mind and this brilliant person that was there and around, and he wasn't with us after so few years. And as you say, who knows where that could have been and what that could have led to. So, but it's wonderful that we're still 150 years later celebrating his life, and that Gerald's involved in that, and that's fantastic.
Absolutely. Thank you. Adam, your thoughts?
Yeah. As kind of what's been spoken of, it gives you history, and I like the feel of it. I almost feel like he's I have a call coming. Is that he almost like conjures the spirit of the voice? And because even after kind of we reach the point where we're talking about him being gone, it's almost like there's still like a reverence for his friend who's carrying on and making breakthroughs of his own. You know, it's a well done piece that really gives you a brief window into the legacy, but almost conjures his voice. I've never read any of his work, but I mean, like, the spirit of the voice kind of comes through towards the end, like, because it's almost like even though he's passed on, it's still carrying throughout this piece. And, you know, it does leave you wondering of the idea of if, you know, what could have been, as you mentioned. You know, you always wonder that when it comes to these types of people who are giants gone far too soon by whatever means, you know, however it happens. You always wonder, and this time especially, it's because he really lets us know how, like, you know, how, this man so eloquent and educated in his ways that looks, you know, nothing like everyone else who's expected and should be of that sort, kind of knocking him dead with his ability and character. And, you know, it's amazing. Had that, you know, not happened, he'd been alive when, you know, they took fame for, you know, their flight and all that stuff. I mean, they would have raised each other up, continuing their friendship. It probably would have brought issues to light. You never know. You know, you just never know when these fires go out, or at least these lights. But they still, you know, like you said, you, I mean, 150 years later, and, you know, but you're shocked that it's not, you know, he's not even more well-known. And I admit, I have no idea about this at all, period. I'm just, you know, on for the ride right now, learning as the show goes, and I'm impressed. It takes a certain amount of I mean, balls. I mean, in this time to have a friendship like that out in the open, and they're both brave for that, really.
Exactly.
Because it's, because either side could take extreme, you know, scrutiny. I mean, it takes a lot to stand with the, you know, imagined enemy. It's not, it's not easy, and it takes a lot of balls and character for sure. Great piece. Like, this was an awesome piece.
Absolutely, I really enjoyed it. All right. I'm definitely having fun with it. Deb.
Sweet.
I am going to... Deb. I'm actually going to have you read. Yes.
You want my format?
My darling.
Hi.
Hi. I am going to... have you read last week's piece for me?
I don't get to comment on Joe.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, Rack. Yes, Rack is where you do get to. Hi, Rack. I'm sorry. I'm a loser. Loser host.
I'm
loser.
Loser hostess. Call. Nobody gets the special Tupperware sweetie.
I just wanted to comment because, you know, I'm usually content to hide in the corner and not necessarily say something, but he brought out, you know, a couple of thoughts that I really appreciated. I mean, first off, you know, there's no denying the friendship that he mentions throughout, but his observations on the man himself, I think, were what I took away most on this poem. And the most telling line was the one about, you know, how did he put it, an intelligence that shouldn't be? I mean, that line is absolutely brilliant because there's a couple of different ways of looking at it. But to me, it speaks of the of what he actually accomplished despite the oppression, that he never, you know, the fact that he was as bright as he was and as popular as he was, you know, despite everyone, you know, society kind of, you know, doing what they can to put him down and hold him back. So, you know, that when I heard that line, that was like really – telling statement, and that I appreciated more than anything. I thought that was great.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Absolutely. All right, Deb, you're on the board. This is from last week's show, Love and Blood.
Okie dokie, and I have to say, I thought this quote was like unbelievable sweet. It was a really, really great quote choice. And the poem is called Captured by the Hunger in Your Gaze. Here we go. Sunset stains the horizon in the garnet hue, striping dark orange on the copper-tinted sky. But then the moon shines opal light on the view, spotlighting two nightingales that sing as wings fly. Now I sit in silence, sans the thumps from my pulse pounding. Snapshots of you parade my brain. Goosebumps crawl. Crumbled sheets of parchment fall mounding and dust balls piled in the corner of the wall. Teeth draw blood sitting in the silent dark, gnawing my lip from hot arousal rages. The bleed red poetry and wet graffiti marked, filling crimson lines on the yellow pages. And every stanza scribbled through the star, melting me with the fire in your stare, transporting me to the place you are, then leaving me squirm, gasping for air. Sleep carries you to me on the neon star with lids down. I still find you there. Every fiber in me aches for pieces of you from twilight into dusk until midnight, longing for this space bodies are one, not two, till the goldenrod sun lifts the dawn's light. End poem.
Damn, that is so good. I can't. I can't even tell you how much I like this, but obviously I did because I wrote you quite the compliment there. So you know what I thought. Adam, your thoughts?
Well, what a longing picture painted in this. I feel exactly this way. I felt this before. Everything is for that one purpose. Everything I'm doing is for that one purpose, and it's not enough. And no matter how much it gnaws at me, it's not enough. Whatever I'm doing is inadequate, and it just can't. And that's almost what I get from this feeling of such powerful longing that just is you feel, you know, as a person. The way I have felt is it's just falling short no matter what I do. It doesn't matter the levels I can reach. It's just not enough. And because I want it, I think it comes from a reverence maybe of the other. And that's what I really get out of this. I mean, it's so well done with beautiful, metaphors and just cool, very cool lines. It's a painting in words. I mean, without saying, the feeling I get really kind of hits close to home for me. I really appreciated this piece. Thank you. This is great.
Amazing comment. Thank you.
And I can turn.
Oh, you're welcome.
Deb. Yeah, it is the beautiful colors and imagery that we've come to know from your pen. It's a gorgeous picture, and you definitely convey that desire. And longing that smolders in someone's eyes when they look at someone almost like they're a steak. It's a lot less eloquent way of putting it than you did, but that's
like
kind of where
steak,
my mind
huh?
Yeah,
I like
well,
that.
You know, cow heart and steak. So that's anyway. I really, I appreciate it. It's just as one of the things in the back of my mind personally, sometimes, I want someone to look at me like a steak, People complain about being treated like a piece of meat, but, deep inside, I think they really want to be. It's a combination of, romanticism, I think, too, because you got turtle doves in there and quite a few bird references that just uplifted the poem and gave it that classic feel too, and then the colors shaded everything in that lovely hue of love and desire. So this is really beautiful.
Thank you very much, Rack. Awesome comment. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. Where do we go from here? Let's see. Adam, you ready to read?
Sure. My own piece or another's piece as a reader?
No. Actually, your own. Well, you know what? I think I am going to have you read a Paul Dunbar piece for me.
Are you indulging?
Yeah.
A little bit.
I am.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
It's one of my favorites. So I'm going to have you read that.
I'll do it justice. Oh my God!
You will do it justice. I am not worried about it. I just have to get it up there. I thought I had it, and I don't now. So let me go grab it again. Of course, it's not going to come up with the email because that's what I want.
Is that the one you? I think you sent one that wasn't really a tape. It's
no.
Called Dreams.
No, that's not it. That's one that I have from him, Yeah. Okay. I've got it right here.
This is cool because I get to actually see a piece of his work because I'm not familiar with it at all. So
I will tell you that as soon as I put it on the board, you'll be like, oh, he wrote that? Okay,
oh,
I get that.
Is it going to hit me like that?
Yeah, it's going to hit you like that. It really is, because you'll be like, oh,
it's
I put that. And everybody,
right.
I will tell you that. I will tell you this, that everybody writes a poem like this about this subject. And you'll be like, oh, so that's it. So click on that link and read that poem.
All right.
Do it.
Yeah, I just had to, like, X out the donation. It's like, donate.
Yeah.
We wear the mask. We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, but O great Christ, our cries to thee from tortured souls arise. We sing, but oh, the clay is vile beneath our feet and long the mile. But let the world dream otherwise. We wear the mask. I think that's end.
Yeah. We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. The whole we wear the mask idea is quite influential in poetry. Many people talk about and write poems about wearing their real self on the inside and letting someone else see themselves on the outside. And Paul Dunbar, of course, addresses that in early in his poetry work. And I bet somewhere in one part of your repertoire or another, you talk about being yourself with someone and being yourself with another person with someone else. And this, of course, falls back to We Wear the Mask. I myself have been inspired to write based on this poem. And a lot of people, when they talk about wearing the mask or hiding yourself from someone else, you know, it comes back to this poem, We Wear the Mask. So I'm pretty sure you've done something like that in your poetry or in your life, Adam. So here's your originator.
Right. And what an idea. I love that it's like he brings this tenderness that we want to be, you know, in the middle, and that we want to be the truth seen, but yet, no, just let them, you know, just let them see the mask. Because we're too vulnerable, I suppose, is the, you know, there's too much darkness that we're not worthy. You know, I mean, it does start touching on ideas of Christianity towards the end, but that we're, you know, we're unfit as a whole, as a creature. But outside of that, you know, how it starts, and then there's like this touch of wanting to be vulnerable, wanting to take off the mask, but no, I'll leave it on. And isn't everyone doing it? It's just almost a normalcy. It's almost a mechanism of social etiquette to have to survive and make your way through life of any kind. You know, it's almost like you wear the mantle or play the part or you wear the mask. You know, let it be you're the mother or the wife or the, you know what I mean, or the who you really are and who you were, or the sister, the daughter, the, you know, you're all these things, but all, you know, so really you have a menagerie of masks, you know, and it's kind of a weird thing to think. When I was young, I remember as a teenager, you think, well, you know what, I don't wear masks, and I had this bravado about me, like I'm 100% authentic, and I'm, you know, me. But now that I'm older, I look back, and that in itself was a mask, you know, and I was just an angsty teen that, you know, called bullshit, and he was bullshit. And I don't know. I used to really, I had this foolish pride within me that I was authentic and I didn't wear masks and I told people how I really felt and blah, blah, blah. You know, I was like, if I didn't like you, I didn't fuck with you. You know, I was like, I don't wear a mask to pretend and put on airs with you. And I mean, I carry that still to a degree, but then I understand so much more now about people, that people are people. You know, we're all just faulty, like as he says here, these vile clay, these, you know, just make me into the best you can, God of my understanding, because I can't do it on my own. I'm just lumpy clay. Yeah, wow, what a cool piece.
Excellent. Excellent. Excellent comment on that poem. I really like it. Everybody shout out to Pre-Bird.
Hello. How are you?
Hey.
Good. Hey. Well, that's actually one of my very favorite poems of all time as far as classical poetry. We Wear the Bath by Paul Dunbar. It's my go-to. When I get down or I get whatever, it's actually on my wall. It's on my poetry wall in my office. It's my Hall of Famer. It's how I was introduced to him. It's everything. It was the one poem I knew that kicked me off into learning about him. And so that's what it was. So do you have any thoughts on that particular poem?
Yeah, well, for one, Adam did a great job reading. But I think the fact that it's so pertinent now and then is pretty special. That closing stanza, though, we smile, but, oh, great Christ, our cries to thee from tortured souls arise. His wording is just so brilliant. But let the word dream otherwise. The world dream otherwise. We wear the mask. And I think you already touched on it, but like everybody wears one or writes about one. Sometimes you just have to bite your tongue and grin. And even that, trying to be civil, is kind of like wearing a mask, you know. So we wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. He's brilliant. He's really brilliant. And I like that you brought this one. Oh, and just on a side note, I put the link to his page here on All Poetry because I was reading some of his stuff, and he's got some amazing poems. I mean, really incredible poems. Some of them are so, like that one line that was in APs that I called like lingo. He's got some that are, it's very prevalent, and I had to get to carefully read it, but he is really a brilliant, brilliant writer.
Absolutely. And, Rakentor, your idea on shirt wearing a mask.
I really enjoyed it. One of the ideas that came to mind was, you know, just the theater comedy tragedy masks that, you know, we inadvertently wear, not as literal as the one that he talks about that hides who we are, because, you know, we can all relate to that, because sometimes you just don't want to be bothered, you know. It's a beautiful book.
That's true. Pretty Bird, did you get any of that?
I did. I read this one when I was doing the research for your thing, actually. And I was torn between this one and An Invitation to Love, which one would pull me more, but it was the other one that I ended up pulling the poem for. But this is kind of that universal truth. But as people, as fallible as we are, we kind of have to be who we need to be in whatever moment. And they're like just different facets of who we are without the bigger picture. And not everybody needs to know our pain, or not everybody needs to know our joy, because sometimes people suck. And that kind of makes it a tortured truth all the way around. those moments in life that are, you know, outside of home, because I'm hoping that home is where everybody can just be who they are and not care. But to have that kind of comfort and self in your own skin in any given moment, it takes a long time to get to that place, you know, and some of us never do. And this was really poignant, powerful.
Nice. Cool. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. You're indulging me. I like to be indulged every once in a while. This is kind of one of those topics that is kind of just about me and indulging me, so I appreciate you guys being a part of that. Well, hell, I'm going to put me up. It's 10 o'clock. Wow, it's gone a whole hour, not even. Woo-hoo! Nobody's gotten mad at me in an hour. What the hell's wrong with that? All right, so how about I throw me up for a minute? You guys can yell at me and attack me, and then we'll go on. All right. Good night, Dab. All right, here we go. So this is my name in history. Pen strokes paint in broad strokes of battlefield notes, blow hard journalist propaganda, printed post. History is sterilized in the act of educational prose. Cookbooks, journals, family Bibles, poems, and old crocheted blankets and bedtime stories told. The cool touch of marble on an ancestor's grave. Seek the imperfections in the sunsets of yesterday. Release the traps of misunderstood perceptions. Untie the binds of uselessness and rise in the light. Unbitten by certain serpents unseen, ignored crisscross eyes of hate unleashed. Sliced by pen, ebony ink spills crimson blood. Silent at age of 33, death defied the world whose words. Speak out loud and share your name and poem.
I do so love the way you leave the story of your middle stanza. Seek the imperfections in the sunsets of yesterday. Release the traps of misunderstood perception. Untie the binds of uselessness and rise in the light. And each one of those lines, seek the imperfections in the sunsets of yesterday. You know, that is just beautiful. Just beautiful. And I don't know. For me, it is absolutely evident that you are strongly pulled to this poet and the history behind it. And it comes through in these powerful brushstrokes that kind of pull at you in these words that carry weight. Oh, sweet Jesus, what was that?
Are you okay?
Oh, Lord.
It was a dog.
No, that, I thought the sleeping dog fell off the bed. Almost lost my shit. It's okay. It was just
Making
me too hot elsewhere.
Okay.
Heart attack.
Okay.
All is well. So.
Okay. All is well. The puppy's okay.
She is okay. And so, Rack and Tour, what are your thoughts on these poems?
Yeah, I love the flow. You know, in the beginning, I know you don't normally rhyme, so I really appreciated it. I almost, you know, sometimes when I start to think and things come out like that, it touches my OCD. So I thought it was great. But the idea that you put forth too, you know, you could tell that you're impressed with this person. You know, and you admire what he accomplished, and you know that's also beautiful. You know, there were quite a few, you know, as you normally do, turn of phrases that were just stunning. So I mean, still a fan.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Adam, what do you think?
Yeah, I really loved this. It was right from the beginning, with the internal rhymes, and it flowed so well with the. I don't know if this was by accident as I kind of look over it, but it's almost like
yes.
It gets smaller and smaller, like less words, and less. And almost at the end, there's this call to like be inspired, which I found was awesome. That's what I feel is coming at the end, like as you kind of, as this powerful voice comes out, you know, charging, and like the feel of it, we come to it, you know, as you tell this tale, and in which you know holds your reverence for him, and then he's passed and. This is what it, you know, how sad it can be, but also then, you know, I don't know. I guess I miss reading that line in a way. It's just his name, share your name, speaking of his name, but I almost felt like it was a call, like your voice matters too, you know, like a call to all people.
No, you read it right.
Oh, did I? Okay, I wasn't sure if I started
absolutely.
Twisting that in my mind in the end. I was like, oh, no, maybe you're just melding it to what you're thinking.
No, you read it right.
And I thought that was unique and powerful in this piece.
Well, the world was, you know, the world denied his death denied him to, you know, tell the rest of his story, to tell, you know, history doesn't always tell us. You know, for me, history is skewed. It's told by, you know, little things like, oh, they read the battle plans from Washington, you know, General George Washington wrote the battle plans. But what was going on in the camp with the men? What was that? What was Private John P. Kirk's, you know, story? What was going on between him and his wife or his children or, you know, this guy over here or, you know, what was happening to this Confederate soldier and this rebel soldier or, you know, that to me is history and that's what we don't read. And, you know, it's usually, you know, everybody against the world or the enemy and the protagonist, the antagonist, but what about what happened when both men didn't have shoes? And that's where I always want to tell the story is from the, I've always been that all my life. I'll stop for just a second and tell you guys this story about a history teacher that just about got bitch slapped by a 19-year-old mother. Well, maybe I was 20. 21, 22. Okay, I was 22. I have to make sure I didn't. But anyway, I was young when I had children, but I was probably 22. 22. He was 5 or 6 years old. So my son was in first, second grade around there, and the teacher had asked him to do a story. And my son had to write a little history story. And this shows you how influential I am with my about history all my life. My son wrote a story about a $5 bill. And he wrote a story about a $5 bill in the Civil War. And the $5 bill, he tells the story of this $5 bill traveling from the pocket of one soldier to the next soldier to the next soldier to the next soldier and how he bought food for a family and how he bought shoes for another soldier. And he's telling this, the $5 bill is giving the perspective of each soldier's story. And the teacher gave she failed my son on this story. And I got in the biggest bite because it was creative. It told a story. It blah, blah, blah.
So creative.
And she's like, but he's a very creative young man. And not that he's probably your age now. He's 38 years old. But anyway, I got mad. I got really mad because she's like, well, it's not historically accurate. I'm like, of course not. He's in the freaking second grade.
He's a child.
He's a child, you know. It's like, well, how? Lincoln, first off, there's no $5 bills. Lincoln's on the $5 bill, blah. And I'm like, because I was using profanity at that time. I'm like, I just really went off because, you know, they're so set on their history. You know, you should spoke about the battle of this, the battle of this, or we were talking about this. And I'm like, shut up. But, you know, that's kind of like the way I instill history a lot, you know, I think if people talk more about history like that, that people will be more interested in what really happened in the world. And that's why I like, you know, things like this and, you know, getting into the head of like Orville Wright and Paul Dunbar, which was the premise of my, you know, this show is these two young men or these three young men hanging out together in right just years after the Civil War, hanging out, just being friends. I mean, the Wright brothers ran a bicycle shop before they got into airplanes, and he has one of their bicycles. He's like, hey, buddy, we're going to build bikes, you know? Hey, try out our bike, you know? Who does that? They did. And that's what I think is really cool about the whole thing. So, anyway, enough of my blabbering about why I like history. And let's get to your problem.
No, I love hearing about it because I find history fascinating, and I think often it's those small stories that give you the most insight to the times, because everything is always such a broad brush stroke of this is the way it was, and, you know, and especially in school history books, you know, it's force-fed this certain idea, which isn't necessarily true to all aspects. I mean, and then just now with what's happening in culture with the whole editing of things, I don't even want to go down that road, but... I mean,
right, no, let's not.
Educate your kids.
Because that'll
you know,
be a tantrum, yeah. That's my own special tantrum for another day.
Yeah, that's another tantrum, right?
Yeah. So I will put you on the board, sir. And
okay,
we will read Adam.
This has nothing to do with these amazing men. I just went on the idea, as you kind of alluded to at the end of your, I didn't, you know, I was like, oh, am I going to like research all this on the fly and create a piece based on, I was like, no, I'll just go with the idea that you kind of nudged of like, but even so, I feel like this really fall short.
It was about friendship,
way.
Bravery, anything. I'm all about the creativity of the friendships and how you get there. And that's what I said. You don't have to always stay on subject. Just give me something on topic of something strong, brilliant, all of that. So I'm good with that. Okay? Let's read away, sir.
Here we go. Here we go. Lily's Mind.
All right.
The lily wilts in dew-kissed melancholy haze. How she wishes to drift into the dirt and forget another day. No will to rise, to reach towards the brilliant sun. Colors leech from her treasured heart, painted the path of devotion I am lit upon. I gild upon the bending bow of her delicate stem and flowers, to preserve and illuminate, to stay the wake of her decay, her fall and peril, if just for a day, to hold her up, cherished and proud, this lily, my love, spirited beyond the clouds. Singing melodies to help her bloom as she further perishes beyond reason or learned insight. She's the edge of never again, and the beating rain is not fair. The strain breaks and shreds reality time and again. I lace her in gold, repairing whatever damage cannot be told. Not to spin fables or rose-colored delusion, but to speak prophetic of her beauty and scars with absolution. The lily I speak is but a figment of what I see, porcelain face sure to break from the smile to the tidal waves of Wales. The sudden crash of the downs and ups come round. I scramble to collect the pieces she leaves about, here and there, breadcrumbs of a tale confusing and in need of empathy. Lily, sweet lily, closes her eyes in the pluck from heaven and earth. I am left here loving the shell of the most beautiful flower to dare to rise from such wicked dirt. And this ghost haunts me in her eternal goodbye. She's so sick, and of this it's apparent. But the ailment has no solution. How could one ever know the mind of a lily? To ponder such things is mad, I suppose. Yet she... that inspires in her daring brush to paint a world dazzling and just her existing, cannot grasp her own beauty, this world crumbling on all sides. She dared, and dare I, peace.
Wow. That's beautiful. I mean, it really is. He's the edge of never again. The beating rain is not fair. The strain breaks and shreds reality time and again. I lace your goals, repairing whatever damage cannot be told. That's been fables of rose-colored delusion. I really thought this was gorgeous. You know, and it speaks to somebody that loves someone that can't, you know, really hold everything together. This world is crumbling on all sides. She dared and I dare I. I really thought it was gorgeous. You know, sometimes you fall into that world of trying to love someone that doesn't know how to love or how to be loved. And, you know, no matter what you do, they just can't find themselves out of that spiral. And it's just hard to be in there and hard to get out. Thought it was brilliant. Brad and Tori, your thoughts?
Yeah, I enjoyed the line. The ending, you know, the whole loving someone that's broken and thought came through more than anything for me, you know, person that and kind of that uphill battle. Yeah, I really related, appreciated it.
Thanks, Rick.
And Pretty Bird.
About as soft a poem as I think I've ever read from you. So it was a nice a surprise, you know, it because there's a softness to your words and the way you read it. The line that you said to me, she's the edge of never again, stands out so stark. What a beautiful and painful notion to be at the end of that abyss where existence, where you end up being haunted by that ghost, you know, but not quite yet, you know, and when you see it coming and there's nothing you can do, it's just beyond, and that line just depicts so much so succinctly and so deeply. It's just that line alone is perfection in and of itself. And I don't throw that around lightly. I'm just telling you. So I love that you kept the entire Lily metaphor through the whole entire thing, because, you know, there are so many poems that go this way and that way, start here and there. And I'm like the queen of mixed metaphors. So I'm basically talking about my nonsense. But you did a great job. And because it does not waver, then it's like two poems in one, because you've got the whole metaphor of a flower, and flowers have no clue, they just are, you know, they don't know what people think of them or how they're revered, or they're you know, they can only do with their short life whatever they can, with the nutrients given, with whatever their environment is, and never to understand how they can impact the world around them, and then to have that laid upon a person. That delicate nature, that almost fragile mind, where you see them, you see how they see themselves, but you see them how they really are, or how they are to you, and there's a disparity there that is heartbreaking. So I think this is.
Wow. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
That means a lot that you guys really, you know, understood, and it touched you in some way. It was.
Absolutely.
You know, I wrote it. But you guys really nailed it. You know, it was loving. Yeah, I didn't want to flat out, you know, write directly, make it obvious that somebody. But yeah, the idea of someone who's unlovable, who feels they're broken, and you know, someone with maybe a severe mental illness or suicidal tendencies, and these ideas to try to love somebody broken that cannot love themselves, at all. You know, it's just almost you're doing everything you can, and the and not leaving them, you know, because it's so easy to give up on people that give up. I mean, I feel like people do that. There's such a huge stigma, and to stand by someone's side throughout it, no matter what, to the bitter end, because it's not a bitter end. It's, I mean, if it ends bitterly or in some tragic way, which often can be the case, you know, these people with fractured minds, often people always think that they hurt people. Actually, more than not, they hurt themselves. And that's the reality. It's not the, you know, the pop culture, junk food media lie of what some of these people are with their mental illness. It's the tragic day-to-day they go through, and having to watch that through some, as someone who loves them completely and utterly, and they can't love themselves. I mean, you guys got it, and I appreciated that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next up, we're going to roll with Steven. He is on the board, and I am going to press a button. La, 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 la. Here we go.
Daisy Petals Swept Under Rug by Steven 76. Tiny toes that tip and totter, ignite the flames and fan them hotter, glide through rooms on fairy wings, disappear as a rooster sings. Veiled vessel of flesh and bone, oiling gears of grandiose home, no way heard and no wise seen, title only spoken whence servants feed. With pines of sussing how to dance, to piano grizzly bear does prance, a martyr screaming out for flour, in kitchen that small morning hour. Sterling silver breakfast nooks, beholden only to the cook, but set inside that polished vial, a daisy mulls on stem's somber smile. End poem.
Wow. Silver, sterling silver breakfast nooks, beholden only to the cook, but set aside that polished vial, a daisy mulls on stem's somber smile. I really like this, Stephen. I think it really is about, you know, somebody that does everything that they're supposed to do and should be seen but isn't. You know, when you're that person that's in the background and you're never heard, seen but never heard, and you wonder why you do everything you're supposed to do and you're never heard or never seen. That invisible person, and you wonder why. There are times in my life I really felt like I was invisible, like I didn't exist, like I was never there. But, you know, I think that happens to a lot of people at some points in their lives, and I think this captured some of the things that happened, especially, you know, when you go through life. And I like how Stephen presented this with Paul Dunbar and all of that. You know, he struggled and you know, he had to fight to be seen. But he worked and he did it and he was seen and he became a brilliant man. And he was seen by hundreds of people that paid money to go see him. And then, you know, this disease took his life. And, you know, his history just kind of faded away. And it's very sad, I think. Pretty Bird, your thoughts?
I love that he chose this to kind of mirror Paul Dunbar. It's kind of it amazes me that people can write things for something else and just have them just feel so apropos for something different. And I kind of love the way, you know, art does that. But yeah, to not be seen or to be, you know, it's not even a thought. It's not even, you know, I would not have known the story if you would not have mentioned him. I just never knew that he wrote
you know, all these poems and novels and all of this stuff. A poet, yes, but he did a lot. And
yeah, he did.
Nobody ever talks about it. You never hear anything about it. And it's a shame that somebody so accomplished in a time where the world was essentially divided, and by world, I mean this country, but whatever, and he can be that successful and that kind of renowned for the time. It's unheard of, and I am completely amiss that it's not a significantly mentioned or taught thing, because lesser deeds are like take center stage. When was it? And you have to wonder why. Like, was it because it was like poetry? You know, like what? why did his legacy not make it to the forefront of historical landmark things? You know. It's just, it's
I don't know.
Stephen's poem is, you know, he's been writing a little bit more abstract lately, and this feels like Stephen. It's got that kind of lovely flow to it. It has that rhyme that it doesn't, there's no forcing it. There's no trying to make it fit. It's just kind of there, and it's lovely. And he's a wonderful storyteller. But I love that he chose this, and I think that it kind of matches his evening purpose.
And Rockin' Tor, your thoughts?
Yeah, Stephen, I could definitely see the parallels to the Dunbar thought. I enjoyed it very much, especially the mention of, being only seen by the cook. I think Sweet quoted that verse. That's just something that is so relatable about, you know, not being seen or being underappreciated for what you've done. You know, it's really a beautiful thought to add to this piece. The whole poem was great. I liked it, Stephen. Thank you.
Adam, your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Relevant and a great idea to add this and share this with us in parallel to Dunbar, and speaks of the same thoughts of the hidden, the lost, the maybe even purposely stricken away or buried on, you know, you almost wonder how could be forgotten, you know, and being about a servant in a house, you know, you shouldn't even be seen, you know, at all, like to only the cook, you know, it's totally relevant and beautiful. It's so beautifully written. And what a great picture to go with it. And the idea, it makes that last line, a daisy mulls on the stem's somber smile. That really leaves me like in a perplexed state throughout the whole thing. Like daisy petals, and then from the title, the daisy petals, something that's a rug. Beauty, like such a beautiful thing, hidden or gotten rid of, and then just that last line is very very ponderous to me, so I'm stuck on it. I'm like really like, because it's like they're separated, one, but they're separate, and one is thinking of the other's somber, like the daisy moles on the stem's somber smile. Wow, that's brilliant. I'm lost in that line. Wow,
that's
Stephen,
brilliant.
This is awesome.
I hate when that happens to me. I'll be like lost in line, and like I'll wake up in the middle of the night going, damn, what did he really mean about that? No. It happens to me once in a while. Steven sent it to me a few times.
Got
him. Great, great comments, you guys.
Crafty fella.
All right, Rack. You are on my board, and I'm getting ready to play you. I'm going to play you back and forth. Are you ready?
You are? Well, where'd you get a recording? Because I didn't record that one.
Oh, you did not record that. All
no,
right.
But I can recite
well,
it from memory.
Oh,
or try.
You? Well, then you're on the board, sir. And then recite for me.
This is about a specific moment in time, inspired by that quote. It's called Kissed by an Angel. I held an angel in my arms, and she taught me how to fly, lifting us to dizzying heights, where tears of joy fall like rain from the sky, clinging to stolen moments where broken pieces fuse as the world around us crumbles, exposing everything we have to lose. Sorry. Matt,
alabaster
skin. I gotcha. Alabaster skin blushing in shades of crimson like her hair. Again. I messed up. Anyway, alabaster skin blushing in shades of cinnamon like her hair. The canvas on which I paint my passion, memorializing the connection we share, manifesting my dreams, fueling a fire I can't resist, having tasted poetry on the lips of the angel I had kissed. And boom.
Bravo.
Sorry, Phil. I
stumbled. Well, I can't read it. Okay. I can't memorize a poem I wrote 2 seconds ago, let alone one I wrote when 3 days ago. So, A, this is beautiful. Clinging to stolen moments where broken pieces fuse as the world crumbles around us, exposing everything we have to lose. I think that's beautiful. Alabaster skin blushing, shades of cinnamon like her hair, the canvas on which I paint my passions, memorializing the connection we share. It really wasn't... Never mind. I'm glad you enjoyed the kiss. But, you know, you're supposed to keep our secrets to ourselves, Brad. You're not supposed to write poems about them.
Oh, come on, I can't help it.
I know.
Or did they say the truth will happen?
The truth will set us free? But now everybody's going to know about our trip to Jersey. Oh, my God. No, this is beautiful. I think this is gorgeous. Pretty Bird, your thoughts?
Oh, I absolutely love this. I do. Because it's full of affection, and when Rack does affection, there's no, you know, half-assing it. He kind of wraps you up in these moments in time, and it's a very beautiful, beautiful thing. And, you know, there's something to be said about, you know, and she taught me how to fly. Here's the thing, and I'm not being all birdie about it, just putting that out there. There's something to be said, something deeply profound, when you cross paths with people that elevate your sense of self in any kind of way and help you see things in a different perspective or a lighter hue that kind of just
lift you up when, especially when you didn't know you needed it. And it's a wonderful way to pull us in. And then you go through these, you know, clinging to someone, moments or broken pieces, cues. Exactly. That's exactly what that is. You meet these people, and where, as imperfect humans that we all are, a lot, oftentimes we will tend to broken or to focus on the broken parts or where we think it's going to crack or where there's a fracture and you expect it to break any minute and it doesn't matter which part of you it is, you know, and then something happens and someone comes across and they make you smile or make you feel something or they feel something unexpected and all of a sudden you don't focus on them anymore and when you think about them again those little cracks are gone because healing happens when you least expect it and I just absolutely love it.
Thank you, Bertie.
And Adam is awesome.
I'm totally in alignment with all of this. I've heard this before, the second stanza, the clinging to stolen moments, that touched me more than, I mean, all of it on the whole, but that really spoke to me. I remember when I first heard it, that jumped at me. You know, where broken pieces fuse. I think that's, and pretty much she nailed it, like summed that whole idea up perfectly and I cinched it up nice because that's exactly what it makes you feel. And you know, it's like this such a beautiful, tender moment where you're healed and free and but it's also, you know, relived as a memory, which is beautiful and almost like it can be summoned up in when you need it. And that's, I think, a beautiful thing. But when we have maybe deep or powerful moments with people in life, you know, it is something that can be treasured forever and can be summoned up. Hopefully, you know, we don't forget these things. And whenever maybe he feels a little broken or a little sharp around the edges, you know, they fuse smoothly and he feels complete again, remembering this thing, whatever this moment, you know. So, you know, it's saying, I mean, I loved it. I almost felt wrapped up in this too, like was spoken of at the top. He's wrapped me up, but I feel though I am him who's wrapped up by this kiss, and that's really like, you know, I'm sucked into the moment. But I, you know, yeah, wow, what a piece, right? Cool piece, man.
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, we have Mr. Titus on the board. If everybody would lend their ear to the wonderful sounds of Titus. Here we go. Maybe. No.
Otto Yeto, come in. If sonnets were to love the price I pay, awoken with a splendid turn of phrase to germinate each word a fine bouquet. It wholly represents what love portrays. If thoughts were to maintain an avid part, a magnitude of heartbeats from thy pen, discover for yourself this aching heart when palpitations play their part again. I shudder at the thought of one extreme. Love turns the next sensation to entrust. If sonnets were to requiem some dream, to drape my soul a masterclass it must, I'll ask your plea for love, the soft reply, the whisper of my lips. before I die.
Oh, wow. Okay, first, I got to say my favorite line in this whole thing is sonnets were to requiem some dream. I love that. I just love that line. I don't know particularly why, but it does. I just like the way it sounds. The sonnets were to requiem some dream. So, yeah. A musical composition for your dream. You know, I again, Titus is one of my favorite writers. He's the Lord and Master that I study. But determining each word a fine bouquet, his holy represent what love proclaims. You know, every word is a fine bouquet, so everything you say can bring, you know, what you mean when you talk to someone you love. You know, I think I also love magnitude of heartbeats from thy pen. Every heartbeat, every word, every letter from your pen, you know, what you write is what you say. I shudder at the thought of one extreme. Well, I could read this whole poem again because I actually really like this. I've written one sonnet because I thought it was that hard to write. So anybody that can do it, I always like think they're wonderful and beautiful, but I can do them. This I know. This is really pretty, Titus. I really enjoyed this. I like the metaphors that run through it. I think they're pretty cool. So there you go. Pretty Bird, your thoughts?
Sonnets are the bane of my existence. I have maybe 5 of them, and 0 are worth a good gosh darn. Not having counted every syllable, it sounds like perfect iambic pentameter. So like Italian sonnets are easier than Elizabethan sonnets or Shakespearean sonnets, which sounds like this is what that is, because iambic pentameter is not my friend. And he speaks like it is just the way he speaks regularly. Like it's not like it's this four-footed meter. And so that is just brilliant in and of itself. But Titus, dear Titus, if sonnets were to love, you know, if you start a poem like that, I might have just fallen in love with you a little bit. I'm just saying. That is about as poetic an opening as I've ever heard. Sonnets were to love. You know, yeah. Because, you know, a lot of people think a sonnet is like the quintessential type of, like, you know, metered poet, like poem, like poetry. And so this is just brilliance upon brilliance upon brilliance. And then he is like the king of all romance. There's something regal about the way he writes, you know, a magnitude of heartbeats from thy pen. I mean, I like this better than I like some that I've read by Shakespeare. Well, okay, then again, Shakespeare is kind of like a dirty old man, and so everyone's like, he's fabulous. I'm like, dude, a flower is never just a flower. Read him again. You know? So this is just beautiful. Just absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Adam, your thoughts?
Yeah, like just I've never written a sonnet. I haven't even attempted, and now I feel afraid and intimidated too. No, I'm just kidding. But wow, what an inspiration! Like this is so beautiful, so flowery. The idea, like you're all touching on, to personify poetry itself and the humanized, like it is alive. That line, a magnitude of heartbeats from thy pen, that really I was focusing on that one, in particular, and to germinate each word a fine bouquet. It wholly represents what love portrays. Wow, this is so beautiful and eloquent, and, you know, you almost, I almost feel like, yeah, like it's, I see the word masterclass in it, and I feel like I'm just taken, I'm just part of a masterclass in some sort of classic poetry. It's amazing, and Titus always delivers. And what a wonderful, elegant read with the music and all that. It was like delicate and so wonderful. Great, great piece.
Yeah, and Raconteur.
Yeah, after Pretty Bird called Shakespeare a dirty old man, I hate to say, my first thought was that, you know, if we traced your lineage, we'd find Shakespeare in your family tree somewhere. But, you know, and that's not the first time I've said that. I don't know if you've ever caught me saying it before, but I have. You know, I just, you know, I appreciate the way that you write. You feel, I mean, your words, they just kind of make other poets envious. That's pretty much all I have to say. I can't. Brat.
He just called Titus a brat. That's so funny.
Poem envy. Sometimes a poem is just
immune.
A poem.
Yeah.
Poem envy.
All right. Poem envy. Yes. Pretty Bird.
Yeah?
You are up next. You are up next, my dear.
Oh.
I have to
now?
Put you on the board.
I got it.
No, I got it.
Right.
I'm so excited. Look.
All right.
It's there. It's there.
I like literally took my hands off my mouth. As
I was so excited.
So
I did myself.
You're awesome. So I was reading through some of Mr. Dunbar's poems, and I fell in love with Invitation to Love. It's all about, you know, it doesn't matter the season, doesn't matter nothing, love is always welcome. And, I mean, it was a lot more eloquent than that, but that was like the gist. So I was like, ooh, I think I have one-ish. I'm not going to pretend to compare, but as the same kind of theme, maybe. So this is the attitude, and it goes like this. Falling Wren's, and it's in Byrne's stanza. So if y'all have never heard Byrne's stanza, it sounds like this. Falling Wren's the flesh from bone, living beyond the comfort zone, falling through yourself alone, you forge a new path. Tarnished now where once you shone, releasing all wrath. Jagged cliffs that straight to climb, the journey turns the life sublime. The best adventures be the grime and true perfection. The view is always worth the climb in retrospection. The echo of a life remains boundless. Time cannot contain. Through blessings, you cannot complain. You see the beauty. Peace releases mental strain. It's nature. And home. Mm.
Wow. You forge a new path, tarnished now with one soul, releasing all that. You have this such an amazing ability to pull in metaphor and imagery like all at once, like almost like just ripping teeth out of your gums and the blood just squirts and goes and they're like, it's right there now taste it. It's all right there for you to see. Jagged cliffs that's great to climb, the journey turns a life sublime. The best adventures do be grim and true perfection. It's like Dr. Seuss and Slipknot sing a song.
OMG. I'm just, you know, force feeding people the taste of my blood, so that is the best thing ever.
Seuss and Slipknot.
It just makes it so beautiful. And as it says at the end, you see the beauty as peace releases mental strain. It's nature's duty. Why, yes, it is. Thank you, pretty bird. It takes you on this, vision and you start with falling rends the flesh from bone, leaving beyond the comfort zone. Okay, well, if you thought you were getting something nice in this poetry, you might as well just shoot yourself now because we were going on a ride. But you let us know.
It kind of speaks for everything I write.
Yeah, I know. But I'm trying to be kind. No, that's why I love your poetry, though. You are. You just put it right out there for us. But the view is always worth the climb in retrospection. Because if you didn't cut it to the bone and all you did was nick yourself, you're going to be sitting there nicking yourself for a long time because you're not going to get to the bottom of it. You're not going to know why. You're just going to sit there and hurt and hurt and hurt and hurt. Cut yourself. Get it done. Face it. Eat it alive and let's go through it. As peace releases mental strain, you'll see its beauty. But if you want to wallow in it, I don't want to hear it. This is why I love Pretty Bird. I really love it. Your blessings, you cannot complain. Very, very beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Loved it. Adam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a powerful, strong piece of claiming, taking, owning. I love the, right from the top, I was like, holy crap. Falling friends of the flesh from, and then clawing through yourself alone. It had me, feeling that, like I really started feeling like I was going to start crawling out of my skin and start climbing new heights and pushing through all the bullshit no matter what the odds, and smiling and happy for moments and then realizing how fleeting they can be and carrying on further and not giving up, and it's all worth it for the view of the end and peace in death, I suppose, that you've done what you came to do through no matter what. I don't know, it was a wonderful, it was cool, it was a cool piece. And I like that style. What an interesting style that lent itself to the journey I felt. This is a good piece.
It's a frolicking type of poetry. You should try it. It's very easy, very forgiving. There's no actual meter, just rhyme, a couple of long lines and short lines, and that's pretty much it.
Sounds like my kind of poetry. Rackentor, your thoughts?
I want to say Pretty Bird saves you the trouble of crawling out of your own skin because she rends your own, rends your flesh for you. the real, I think, essence of what you do, I think, is more of a, you have an ability to hold a mirror up to a vampire and still have them see their reflection somehow. So, that's what I love about the way that you write. You find a way of showing some, you can't see for yourself. So, it's beautiful.
Absolutely. Well, I will tell you that my dog's awake. It's like, hello, everybody, I'm awake. Think I might want to go outside before I go back to bed again.
My dog's up on.
Sorry, guys. But we all know how he is.
Oh, is he telling us that there's a repeating stanza in Burns' stanza? Is that what he's doing?
No, he's telling me it's almost time for you to get off the phone. That's what he's telling me. It's like, Mom, it's late. I want to go to bed. But anyway, what do we got going on? A team of voices the next couple of days. Adam, you have a show tomorrow night?
On LCN.
Well, you want to tell us about it?
No.
There you go. it's just
well, you don't have to.
No, sure. I appreciate that. Me and old Razzle Dazzle, just kind of, it's open poetry, and we're doing our liquidation thing where we go through anything that's been missed over the course of days. But also, you know, any and all open poems are welcome. Just come do your thing, call or whatever, and we'll be lucky and happy to have you.
And that's why we have leftovers of...
Yeah, that's why.
You got 20 leftovers, and you're inviting more rights. So, you know,
that's the insanity.
Don't, if I ask what's going on, it's okay that you tell me, even if it's on a different radio hosting show, okay?
Oh, okay. I was just...
We're good.
Okay.
It's all right.
I just didn't expect it. It kind of came out of, like, I didn't expect it. So I was like, whoa.
Like, whoa, she's asking me, but I thought, no, we're good.
You know, honestly, I forgot until you said that I forgot I was even co-hosting tomorrow. So I was like, oh, shit.
All right.
Oh, that's right.
Saturday night around here, we have Hatter AP in depth. You know, their Saturday night discussion about what is the word of the week. What is the word of the week? Let me see.
It's bat.
Want a bat? Baseball bats. That shit crazy. Wherever the word takes you, go where it takes you. that's the topic for the week on the thrilling things. Sunday night over in the adult lounge is, take it away, Miss Pretty Bird.
It is slam that thing. So first of all, the adult lounge is for people 18 and over, and we do sensual. And so this is going to be kind of like a slam session of spoken word poetry, of any form of performance poetry, as long as it's sensual. And it is a private show, so feel free to ask to join the group. It says you have to be 18 and over. We have to vet y'all because, you know, that's how we roll. And then sign up for invitations because the show is private for a reason.
Yes. And Monday night is Personal Prompt Monday with Deborah Lee. And this is very... Prompt Monday, Personal Prompt Monday with Deborah Lee, and it is kind of an interesting show because it has lines from all of the board of directors here at Board of Directors, don't I sound fancy, the board here at a team of voices, which is myself, Sweet Pea, Deborah Lee, and AP and Hatter, and somehow you can get all kinds of points with this if you know who the lines are from. So not only do you put the lines in a poem, but if you know who wrote the lines, you can end up with points. So if you guess all 12 of who wrote these lines, you can get 10,000 points. So know your host, know their poetry, and get 10,000 points. So check that out.
There you go.
I don't know how you don't know my lines because they're so whacked out. Everyone should know who wrote. You just look at it and go, oh, yeah, that's Sweet Pea. Oh, yeah, that's Sweet Pea. Oh, yeah, that's Sweet Pea. Mine are the easiest ones to pick out. There you go. So that's like an easy 2,000 points right there. There you go. And that's about where we're at. Yeah. Everybody have fun with that. I got 10 seconds to say thank you for everybody for showing up being here. That includes the infamously famous raconteur, AP Hatter, Adam, the Adam Bomb, as I call him,
thank you everybody that wrote for me. Let me see where did I go back. Let's see, I'm going to get Pretty Bird, Racking Tour, Steven 76, Deborah Lee. A special, special thanks to Gerald Green for all the information he provided with Paul Dunbar. Special luck to him and his work at the Paul Dunbar home. Remember, he does have a book out posted in 2019 with 422 Paul Dunbar poems that he put online. I have that link if anybody wants it. And the other poems that he read for us tonight of Paul Dunbar poems. Titus, Deb, A.P. Taylor, Pretty Bird, all of you that showed up for my show, I cannot do this without you. Everybody out there listening, you guys rock. You are my true heart, and I just could not do this without you. I have fun. And remember, next week is the last show that I will be doing on Thursday nights. I am resigning from Sweet Discussions on Thursday nights, just so that you know. I will be leaving Thursday night's Sweet Discussions. But here's a hint. Something else is happening. It involves things that have the word hump, like humpback in Notre Dame, hump whales, hump day, all in May. So think hump, and that's the day I'll be on. So, come May. I'll be Wednesday. Hump Day is the sweet pea. So, there we
Wacky
go.
Wednesday. Wacky Wednesday.
Yes. I'll be on Hump Day. I'll be on Wednesdays. I'm moving from Thursdays to Wednesdays as of May.
Any excuse to say hump?
Any excuse to say hump, you know that. All right, guys.
Oh,
good
Lord.
Night. Have a...
The black eyed peas are in my head now.
Thank you for your love talk radio.
Bye.
Thank you for using Black Tech Radio. Good night, everybody. Have a good one. Thank you for showing up. I'll talk to you all soon.
Hump you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye, hon.